She walked through an orchard, fallen apples red and cidery on the ground, crossed a stone wall, and wandered on into a small wood. The path was carpeted with leaves, red, orange, gold, giving off a rich, earthy smell. Polly scuffed along, pushing the toes of her running shoes through the lavish brightness. It was her first New England autumn, and she was exhilarated by the colors drifting from the trees, dappling her hair with reflected amber and bronze. The sun shone with a golden haze through a muted blue sky. Leaves whispered to the ground. The air was crisp, but not cold. She hummed with contentment. The trees were young, most no more than half a century old, with trunks still slender, completely unlike the great Spanish moss-hung water and live oaks she had left less than a week before. Apples from a wild seedling had dropped onto the path. She picked one up, russet and a bit misshapen. But the fruit was crisp and juicy, and she wandered on, eating and spitting out the seeds. Now the path led her toward a forest of much older trees, towering maples, spruce, and pine. Reaching above them all was an ancient oak, with large serrated leaves of a deep bronze color, many still clinging tenaciously to the branches. It was very different from the southern oaks she was used to, and she had not recognized it as one until she learned her mother and uncles had always called it the Grandfather Oak. "When we first moved here," her grandmother had explained, "most of the oaks were gone, killed by some disease, but this one survived, and now our land is full of young oaklings, all evidently disease-resistant, thanks to the Grandfather Oak." Now she looked at the oak and was startled to see a young man standing in its shadows. He was looking at her with lucid blue eyes, which seemed to hold the light of the day. He wore some kind of white garment, and one hand was on the head of a tan dog with large pricked-up ears outlined in black. The young man raised his hand in greeting, then turned and walked quickly into the forest. When she reached the great tree, he had disappeared from sight. She had thought he might speak to her, and she was curious. The wind had risen and played through the pines, sounding almost like the rolling of the breakers on the beach at Beneseed Island, off the coast of South Carolina, where her parents still were, and which she had left so short a time ago. She turned up the collar of the red anorak she had taken from the generous supply that hung on pegs outside her grandparents' kitchen door. It was her favorite, because it fitted her well and was warm and comfortable, and she liked it because the pockets were full of all kinds of things. A small but very bright flashlight, a pair of scissors, a notepad in a leather binder with a purple felt pen, an assortment of paper clips, safety pins, rubber bands, a pair of dark glasses, a dog biscuit. For what dog? She sat on a great flat glacial rock known as the Star-Watching Rock and looked up at white clouds scudding across the sky. She sat up straighter as she heard music, a high, rather shrill piping of a folk melody. What was it? Who was making music out here in the middle of nowhere? She got up and walked, following the sound, past the grandfather oak, in the same direction as the young man with the dog. She went past the oak, and there, sitting on a stone wall, was another young man, this one with lustrous black hair and skin too white, playing a penny whistle. Zachary! She was totally startled. "Zachary Gray! What are you doing here?" He took the whistle from his mouth and shoved it into a pocket in his leather jacket, rose from the wall, and came toward her, arms outstretched. "Well met by sunlight, Miss Polly O'Keefe. Zachary Gray at your service." She pulled away from his embrace. "But I thought you were at UCLA." "Hey!" He put his arm around her waist and hugged her. "Aren't you glad to see me?" Of course I'm glad to see you. But how did you get here? Not just New England, but here at my grandparents'.